Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Lioness Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Leanne.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Steph.
And I'm Louie.
And we do have a special guest today, and that is Louie, the Jack Russell mix. He's Kelly's little doggy. He's just come to join us today.
He's my boyfriend's dog. Yeah. But yeah, I guess he's mine now.
You're mine now.
He's going to be a very active member of today's podcast. And we will be today talking about the subject of depression and anxiety.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We're not that excited about this one today.
Jolly topic.
But it's something that we definitely will have a lot of experience in, and we should probably cover on this podcast.
Yeah,
because
indeed.
It definitely goes into spirituality,
and you know, it's a growing epidemic. It's global.
Yeah,
I think everyone is either suffering from it or
because
knows someone who is.
I do think that depression and anxiety is a spiritual wake-up call. It's you trying to tell yourself something.
Yeah. Trying to push you in a different direction because it's you're stuck, you're stagnant.
Yeah. So in today's world, obviously a lot of people are depressed and anxious, and it's just something that's being, I guess mental health is only just being looked at in mainstream.
Yeah,
it's actually been acknowledged now.
Because it has to be because it's everywhere.
Exactly. But, you know, not long ago it was considered
madness, I guess, or
just not, it wasn't
not
made up.
Not a real
illness. Yeah, it wasn't real. It's not physical, is it? So without
the physical
evidence, it wasn't considered real,
no.
I guess. Now it is by mainstream standards. So, like, you can go to the doctors if you're depressed.
Yeah. Although the doctors isn't exactly the best place to go if you're depressed,
well,
in some opinions.
Are finding out now, because I've been depressed, well, I felt depressed for quite a long time, a lot of my adult life. And when you go to the doctor, they don't really know a lot about it, really. And they are sort of testing out ways that might work for you. There's no medication specifically for anything. They don't know, they can't specifically pin down any ailments, so
no.
It's like they are trialing chemical antidepressants, and a lot of people have been taking those. I took some for a short period of time,
long enough to know that they weren't particularly helpful. Debilitating.
I think what people are starting to realise now is that it is just a way to cover symptoms, and it's not really actually going to change the root cause or... So it's like a chemical imbalance, they see it as, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's trying to balance those chemicals physically, using the chemicals, not going into really...
The psychological.
I mean, they're starting to do that now. They're starting to more push the psychological aspect of it and getting help
like
that
therapy
way.
And counselling, but it's all within the system. It's still very medicated vibes, I think. Like, I don't know. Like, I know a few people that have had counselling by the NHS, because we're in the UK here, we use the NHS, and they've found it really hasn't been successful or particularly helpful, and end up pulling out of that. Even
it's just
trying
one thing after the other, and it's never really getting to the root cause of why people are unhappy and feeling this way.
It's also very brief as well.
Yeah,
when I had my issues and I wanted some help, I got given some leaflets and got told to take some tablets. I actually refused to take tablets because I'd known someone who had a bad turn on them, so it put me off. I'm like, it does help some people even just for a small amount of time, but for me it wasn't right, and I'm glad it didn't. As Kelly said, you know, it doesn't solve anything.
You get like a 10-minute slot
Yeah.
Like, they kind of have to get you in and out.
Yeah.
Like, it's still a business at the end of the day, and that's kind of what's wrong in the medical.
And I wasn't offered any actual help. I wanted counselling. I wanted to talk to someone. That wasn't offered to me. There was just a helpline that I could call, like, in an emergency. You know, if I felt like I was going to take my life, it's like, call this number. And I was like, oh, yeah, because that's what I'm going to think about in that moment.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine who has been suffering, she was informing me the help that she's got. She did take the medication, but she then got passed on to an online program to read up and do some cognitive behavioral therapy. So that was helping her. And then also a once-a-week phone call with a therapist. And that's just like a couple of years difference, and that's already, I mean, it's still not solving anything, but it is more advanced. But the issue of that is that she has it for a month. She gets 4 weeks of phone calls, and then that's it, you know. And then, you know,
yeah, that's there not is support,
no,
is
it's
it
not
really?
Enough. It's not going to so fix limiting. Her in 4 weeks, you know.
Yeah,
it's a lifelong battle, depression, to be honest, and it comes in waves, and it's not the same for everyone. And I think some people can almost, because of maybe the way you behave, you choose to react within these emotions of this place, people can often be like, oh, it's just normal. Oh, you know, you're just, that's
it's
just life, you
it's
know?
It's normal in this society to not like your job, not have good friends, not get on with your family, not have good human connections. And I think this is what we're realizing through doing more spiritual work, is that it's the lack of connection with other people and your place on this earth that makes you feel like this. You feel alone, and that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. And no pill, like the pills, those pills, it kind of numbs the feeling, and it might be good for someone who is literally in a suicidal state and they need some thinking space and some time, that it could possibly be good for someone like that. But as a solution, I just think there's so many young people on these kinds of medications now, and it is just being, the medication just gets thrown out there, and it's all, we're all guinea pigs to it.
Yeah.
It's not really, they're testing it on us. And yeah, I don't see it working that way. I think going into the root causes of the problems has been much more helpful for me. And honestly, I've not heard any of that from the doctor. I've heard, like, had to do my own research.
Yeah, same with me. And healings come from being self.
It comes from, just finding information that resonates with me personally.
I think maybe we should talk over, like, some symptoms that we've had with depression, as we're on the topic of depression. Because I think everybody suffers in a different way. There's no a cookie cutter form for how you can be with depression. It affects people in different ways. And I think this is the almost what makes it such a silent killer, is you're like, oh, I'm not at that point yet. I'm not at that point where I'm going to reach for the knife. Yeah. So then you spend years like, in a really unhealthy mindset, which is depression, because it goes on for years.
I mean, all depression
because you're not at a 10, you're at a 5. There's no point. That's not a life worth living, even if you're at a 5. Any amount of depression, you know. So, like, for example, if we can talk about like different symptoms, so people can go like, you know what, I feel like that. Maybe I should do something about it, you know, because they might not be really aware of how it's not normal, you know. So like one symptom I can think of is like how you just have no like ambition to do anything, from the simplest things. Like you're so fatigued,
so you
to the point
like
where
energy's been drained away from
exactly
you.
You're so fatigued that even having to do the simplest task, which you should want to do, which is like shower, you know, sometimes just to, it takes so much energy to pull yourself into the shower. It takes so much energy to make yourself something healthy to eat, that you're not just sticking the microwave and it's ready in 2 minutes, yeah. You know? It,
you're all these, depressed.
So you end up making it worse with these symptoms. Yeah, so then
it's
you're like...
the opposite of expression. It's yeah. when you stop expressing yourself. You don't realise it's from this, but... And then you push yourself down more and more because then...
Then you start to
you get
isolate.
Down and then you focus on that and then you isolate yourself and then there's no energy coming in.
And it is really weird because it's almost like everything is like, oh, I have to do this.
Everything's
oh,
a task.
I have to do yeah. that.
That you don't want to do.
Yeah, everything. That, and it's and ridiculous because it's your life that you're living in.
Everything's
it shouldn't
a task
be like
that you don't want to do. And then you start realizing that, like, there's so much stuff that you don't really want to do and then you can't manifest the energy to put into it because you're just not passionate about it.
Yeah.
Life doesn't seem worth living because there's so many things, like, that you're looking at that you don't want.
You think it's a problem with overthinking as well. So you overthink everything you have to do to the point of it's like, say there's something you don't want to do, like, I don't know, I've got to go
to the post office
yeah so I've got to go to the post office
that is hell.
It's like yeah. you start to build it up in your head. You started thinking about it the day before when
and you
realized
living in the post
yeah.
office.
Yeah, so then you're like, oh, if I go to the post office, what if I bump into that person that's always flipping, keeps me there talking and ask me all about and what will I say to them, and you start almost like playing out the scenes of what could happen. And it's this overthinking of everything you're that you have to do or you're about to do or you even want to do. So then you think of a creative cool idea or project you want to start, and then you overthink it to the point you never even start that project. You overthink, oh, but this could go wrong and that could go wrong, and oh, I'm no good at this and I'm no good at that. It's like this endless
trap. You bombard
trap.
Yourself
this is
with
what,
reasons why you can't do something.
Yeah, it's like the mind trap that people don't really even talk about. They just talk about the suicidal side of it or
small talk.
Yeah, and it's the thing is it's a lot deeper than that late stage. Okay, that's the end stage, yeah, where you want to take your life, but it builds up over years. Depression builds up over years and it starts with these feelings and these types of thoughts, and it's something you need to get on top of.
Yeah,
the sooner the better.
I think what people don't realize is happening is that with all this lack thinking and looking at the bad parts of your life that you don't want, this is going into the victim state. So when we're in the victim state, there's nothing we can do. It's out of our power. Everyone else is to blame. And so we cannot move forward in our lives. And this is what I've really realized recently, is that I have to take responsibility for my own life. And no matter what's happening around me, I'm the only person in control of my thoughts and where I direct them. So that's the kind of thing that's sort of helping me to get out of this mindset stuck in the victimhood of depression, basically.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the tablets that helped me do that, because I felt like it was just sort of putting it on hold for a bit, not really wrapping my head around how I got depressed and how to get out of it. Because really, depression is just the opposite of expression. So it really started when I felt like that I couldn't express myself, and then when I would want to express myself, then it, like you said, the ego thoughts come in and battle me down, and I end up frozen and not getting anything done. And then I then put all my worth in productivity, which is not happening.
No.
So I'm worthless. So then you spiral again, you come back round.
The worst thing you can do is, and that's another side effect, is we put so much of our value in our productivity, and it's ridiculous because we are.
Did we really come here just to complete tasks?
No.
Task after task after task. Like, we are really emotional, sensitive beings, and thank God that we're coming into this time where it's being recognized, and we can start talking about this stuff, and that mainstream medical is not actually helping. It's keeping us stuck, in my opinion. And I came off the tablets. The tablets made me feel weird and numb, and dissociated.
Yeah, when I was
almost like happy about it. Oh, thank God, I don't have to deal with that, these feelings, because it's numbed it out a bit, you know. But those feelings, they are trying to tell you something personal for you. You're going in the wrong direction of your life, and you're the only one in control to change it. So
when I got near to my 9, you know, when I was at that end, higher end of the scale of depression, and I reached out to the doctors, and this was way back in 2012, and I still lived in London, and I was just so done. I was actually an insane, it's really gone away now, but I was an insane hypochondriac back then. I was just thinking I was dying. Do you remember, like every other week, like thinking, convincing myself that I was. So I ended up going on the tablets. I only lasted a few months on the tablets as well, because at the time I was a songwriter, a full-time songwriter, which meant being creative, which I didn't even realize. But a lot of my songwriting was based around all these crazy emotions I was feeling.
And releasing them.
Yeah, and I was releasing them through the songs. And this is another good way that I was dealing with the depression, but it wasn't enough because my life was so stagnant and I wasn't in the place I needed to be. I realized that later in the year, but I ended up coming off the tablets because I could not write a song to save my life, because I was so numbed out and I was almost blocked off from that right side of my brain where the creative inspiration comes in.
You feel less human.
It was absolutely horrible. And what I did was, when I came off them, I knew I had to drastically change my life right now, or I can't go on, because I can't go on the tablets. I'm doing what I want to do. I was being a songwriter. There was no, like, I feel like this because my life's not where I want it. But where it wasn't was, I was stuck in a toxic environment in South London, which is somewhere I really didn't want to be. But I had this belief system that I was stuck there. And this belief system of being stuck there was really bringing me down into the depths of depression. And when I had that eureka moment where I was like, I'm not stuck here. I'm not. Who says I'm stuck here? I'm going to get us out of here.
And that's how, with no money,
with no, you know, good steady wage or credentials, me and my sister managed to move, you know, into a cottage in the middle of the woods, isolated. And we took a year out to isolate and really take a break from everything in life, to sort of strip back and go back to nature and just see what happens. And I'm so grateful we did that.
Yeah,
that was in my mid-20s, and my life after that year of doing that completely took a spin and went on a whole other path. We went vegan, we became spiritual.
Spending time in nature is a really, really effective of connecting back to yourself.
And don't think that it's a way to not feel the pain, because we went to the woods and we met our shadow, you know. We really was faced with everything. When you isolate and when there's nothing left but you and nature and your own thoughts, then you really have to face everything. And I think that's kind of what it is. It strips everything back. And
it was a real turning point for us.
It shifted something within us, even if we weren't aware at the time.
Like, why I had to go vegan immediately.
Yeah,
I just knew
that it was a massive shift. And so much can be said for taking big steps of change in life. So I do feel like being stagnant
of change, which stops us a lot and keeps us stuck in uncomfortable situations, because we're so used to being uncomfortable that we just stay in it because it's familiar, because I know how to deal with this discomfort. I don't want to go into another discomfort.
That's
how we think, like, oh, it's going to be another discomfort, you know, that I could never really get what I want and deserve, or I don't deserve it. A lot of it was self-hate for me, that I had to reprogram myself, because you grow up in the society and you are literally trained as a woman or a man to hate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was set up this way.
It's like when your life is stagnant and you're not making any more progress towards your life purpose, that's when I think the super high levels of depression will begin to kick in until you can make that step. And if you can't make that step, then that's why I think we get these awful situations where people choose to check out because they've not been able to seek the helps to shift them onto their life purpose, because we all here for a reason, and we all can find our joy here and our purpose here. And there's no way in it ever is possible that we are not here for something, that we could not enjoy our time here. We didn't come here to suffer.
Yeah, but we're not taught about our spirituality. So when these feelings come up in us, we think
squash them down
that they are like illness or bad, or they
alien.
I don't know what they mean, you know, because we are so disconnected from ourselves in just in growing up in this society, because that's the way it's always been. Now it's changing, and suddenly it's more acceptable to talk about mental illness and emotions and things we want to change, and being religious and spiritual. And so like loads more people are really like getting into the new age movement, I guess you could call it, and starting to understand it's not something that can be fixed with a pill anymore. Well, not that it ever was, but that's sort of how we've been covering it over.
And I think like that's definitely something worth bringing up, is sort of the pressure to be fixed. And I think you two, to be honest, have much more experience with this, like the pressure from family and friends to be fixed.
Yeah.
And like maybe talk about that a bit, because I think that adds to it. It doesn't help. Yeah, it adds to it.
And you feel broken and then someone else wants to fix you. So that confirms that you're broken.
It confirms that you're not good enough, that you're not good enough how you are.
What people don't understand is that
I'm not accepted.
That you are completely, like, how you feel is correct in that moment. Like, are you listening to yourself, or are you listening to what everyone else is saying about it? Because you can only know for sure that message that's coming directly from you. Because it's coming from your higher self, you know, at the end of the day. And we are trained to look outside of ourselves for all the answers when we can get a lot of them inside. And trust, just having discernment and trusting our intuition. And we're not taught to do that in this society. You're not taught that in school. And these are the problems that are coming up now. People are starting to realise it and want to change the system. And I'm excited.
How did that make you feel, that sort of pressure, Steph?
That's actually...
I feel like Steph has a different, like her whole own story with this as well. It's interesting to hear all the perspectives.
That part with the family is probably the most painful aspect.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think because in any situation with me, whenever it's whenever I've had a blip or it's never really been my drive to help myself. It should have been. I'm learning that now, but it's always for them, because I can see how unhappy they are that I'm unhappy. And
then you're in this circle of
people pleasing,
it's you who doesn't feel good.
And I actually had a moment last week. I remember I was feeling really down. I was so emotional and I couldn't even pinpoint why, but I was just getting to the point where I was hysterical. I was so upset. And I said to my mum about it, and she goes, "Oh, we all get like that sometimes." And at first I was like, no, my pain, like this pain is real. There's clearly something going on, and I'm more aware now to acknowledge that. And I'm not just being stupid and or over emotional. There's something deep within me that I'm not aware of. And I've actually, like, I said that out loud to her. And when she was like, "Oh, well, you know, we all feel like that. Sometimes I feel like that." I actually felt really sorry for her. And it made me realize, you know, I don't hold it against her for not acknowledging like how real and important this is. It's just their generation. I felt really bad for her, actually.
Yeah, because they are not open.
No, to have grown up that way and not realise.
Really,
yeah, exactly. We do.
Yeah.
And we have the same with our dad.
Yeah. And it's just getting through to them.
Insensitivity is in the society and that generation, and we're becoming much more sensitive to it now. And it's, you have to validate other people's feelings. That's how they feel.
And I feel like it's one that I've learned from, you know, being the main support with you and everything you went through, Kelly, with over the last few years as well. And by being support, the best way to be supportive is not in that classic way that our parents tend to. And it's nothing against them. It's the generation of just trusting the medical institute, you know, and they want to just send you in that direction. And they don't understand that it's a spiritual thing. Louis is being a little cutie. Don't fall off the chair.
Come here. Come here.
But what was we saying anyway? I'm distracted now.
Yeah. So, yeah, that generation, they do just rely, they have been relying on authority.
Yeah.
Government authority, basically, to tell them what to do and trusting that that's right. But, you know, we are really, really in the infancy of our medical knowledge.
Oh, that's,
you know,
what I was going to say.
It's all a test at the moment.
But I always find, like, you can go either way when say if you've got someone you're close to who has depression and you're not sure how to deal with it or how to help them, you know, the either extreme is not good. The extreme of trying to just send them towards the doctors or you need to get help, like you're not allowed to feel like this isn't right. But also the other extreme I found I tended to go towards was the to wallow in it with the person as well. And that is in, like, the
just jumping straight in there with
yeah
them.
Like wrapping them in cotton wool,
and also you're bringing yourself down to that level.
It's like, you know, that classic thing of, you know, someone falls in the mud and are you gonna just, oh no, you're in the mud, and fall down into the mud with them, you know, and roll around, now we're both in the mud. You know, let's
that
all feel it.
Episode.
Yeah. And I thought that was such a brilliant way to explain, like, you can't help people by being like, I know how you feel. Yeah. I'm down here with you.
You
want to
see them.
You need
where
to
they are, validate where they
see
are.
See where they are, but not join them. No. And you need
but
to be able to
that they are just where they are because they need to be
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And
you
need
can
to get through it.
And you can suggest things and you can be of support for them. I'm here to support you, but it's not.
And I see where you are.
Yeah, it's not drowning in it with them, not like overly like
yeah.
wrapping them in cotton wool and being like, it's okay, you just stay here in the dark and here's a blanket.
Yeah.
That's just not helpful. And it's like, I get a lot of these ideas from Yvette Rose, you know, because of her way of healing trauma. It's not about that, you know, wrapping them up and you just lay here, you know. No, you need to let them feel it and let them pick themselves up, because only when
they
pick themselves up
to do that,
then that's when they're actually going to leave depression behind.
When they're ready, because they might need to go through this right
yeah.
now, so you can see them there and help them if they need it. But yeah, the fixing can be really damaging, and they're also wallowing with them. You're completely right.
Yeah, so it's like there's that. It's quite a hard thing to do as well, because you're so natural, aren't you, to be like, oh, it's okay, I know how you feel, and
yeah.
be really like, oh right, oh, you know, I'm here.
I'm just really cold, so that's warming me up. That's nice.
I'm rubbing Steph's arm, you know. That stuff is great, and it's nice to be like that, but it's not the way to deal with it in the long run, because that person then becomes reliant on that energy they're getting from you, and then they're like, oh, I need the energy of people feeling sorry for me, like that's
yeah.
my only way of getting energy now, instead of getting energy through their own creative inspiration, through their own drive. And then that's how we create codependence.
Yeah, it's a victim state, and
yeah.
there's no power there for you.
So it's
there's nowhere to go from that.
Yeah,
you know,
you really
you
have to be strong for
bit.
These people, right? You
yeah.
have to be like, I see you, I know where you're at.
You
know, what can I do to support you to get out of it? You know, you do want to lift them out of it. And sometimes, even if temporarily, you have to you can use distraction for that, showing them, doing things with that person that you know they enjoy, with no pressures attached.
And when the emotions come up, let them, allow them.
Yeah.
Allowing what is in the moment rather than pushing it down all the time, and then we can just deal with it in the moment.
Yeah.
And then it's out there. You don't have to push it down.
Yeah, exactly. So... so maybe now we'll touch base a little bit on anxiety, which it comes with depression. It's a major part of depression, and that you might, for example, I have the anxiety disorder, so it's I have more issues related to anxiety. Then some people might, there's so many symptoms that come with depression. Anxiety is just one of them, right? Yeah, depression, yeah. You get insomnia. And what's like the opposite to that, where you sleep too much,
fatigue,
too high appetite, low appetite.
Yeah.
There's so many things that can create other disorders, OCD,
it's basically
ED.
Like grasping for coping mechanisms.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's literally, I would say depression just is all types of mental disorders, right?
But I think anxiety is not necessarily linked to
depression.
Being aware of your depression, because I think anxiety is something
everybody
is experiencing at the moment because of the world we live in. It's going to be really hard.
It comes
to not
in different variants.
Anxiety, but yeah, it's on a
some
scale.
People. It's to the point like
to me, anxiety is a feeling. Sorry, I just want to say that, and it's usually like in my chest area. Can move up and down.
Yeah, I think
it
can come from the solipsis or the heart.
Between the whole area.
Personally, for me, it's more to side of plexus. So I know it's to do with my self worth and who I self expression, and sort of my power out in the world, and that's sort of all those sort of related things.
Social anxiety.
Yeah.
So anything that like where I feel like I need to perform or I can't be myself, like there's going to be anxiety there. And living in a state of authenticity gives you a lot of anxiety, let me tell you.
Sometimes.
And I'm now having to just work on authenticity. I'm realizing now that I'm trying to be a different person than who I am.
Being inauthentic.
And I think we all do this, and we can all be different people to different people in our lives. But when you bring it all back to yourself and just forget what other people think and try and be yourself, that's when I've started to feel like the anxiety easing. So I think it is a lot of pressure for people to be a certain way. That's where the anxiety in them sort of starts. It's like, I need to be this way. Like it's competition, you know, I've got to do this. Like it's a stress. Something's going to happen if I'm not this way, or this doesn't happen if I don't do this, you know, and it's all fear based at the end of the day. It's driven by fear, in my opinion.
There's too much expectation on us now. Think like, you know, we're meant to be wiser than the previous generation, but we're meant to fix everything. We are millennial generation, you know. We've just been left in the shit. Like
to deal with
the people before us, you know, they claim that we have everything when we don't. They realize how much they've messed up with us, so then the future generation are getting the help they need, but we have just been left in the middle. And it just drives me insane. We're meant to, you know, be able to suss out all of our taxes and stuff that we were never taught that in school, and we're meant to have great jobs, live, you know, have great homes.
I wonder why we're all so anxious,
be so more mentally capable now, because there's tools out there to help us. It's just like, well, no, because no.
Nobody knows what they're doing now.
No.
And we don't have enough money to live.
No.
Well, you know?
So everyone's still living at home, and if they're not, they're just going around travelling, because
if they can afford to do.
So in order to not want to kill yourself, you go and seek these external things, or you know,
you numb it out with drugs or alcohol, and it can go that way, or you know,
or any addiction. That can be from food. Sex, food, exercise.
People
you know,
are really suffering with addiction at the moment, because that's another coping mechanism.
There's not a person I know that hasn't got an addiction. Like, there's not somebody.
No.
You know, even if it's like for our dad, the cleanest living person you could know, he's got a work addiction.
Yeah.
He's got a boundary not having them addiction, whatever that's called. Like, you know, it's we all have these.
It's a lot of pressure on ourselves.
Yeah.
So we can start to take these pressures off. yeah, for me, I've realised, like, you know, I only have so much power and...
Hey, you're supposed to be the good dog.
I think, like, with anxiety, it can come in all different forms as well. So, like, you can physically react to it in different ways. Some people have panic attacks. Some people sweat. Some people... they maybe can't breathe too well. What's some other symptoms?
This, like, appetite loss.
Appetite loss, yeah, I get that majorly.
I get, like,
yeah.
I get a really, like, strong, like, tightening in my chest. And
like
it
can
go
attack.
On for days. It feels like, yeah, you're almost going to have a heart attack.
I feel nauseous a lot. Restless, is so restless.
Oh, restless, yeah.
Like, worried. And sometimes I'm so worried and then I realise that I can feel tension throughout my whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm just locked up.
You're locked up, you're frozen up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that a lot. It's really actually quite intense. And to think most of us are living with this day in, day out. And unless you know some ways to deal with it, some more holistic ways to deal with it, then you could feel really lost in with this. Because when I went literally last year, because I have really severe sweating from my anxiety disorder, it makes me really embarrassed, and it's like it affects my life beyond just the feelings of anxiety. Yeah. Like, it's become a physical embarrassment for me now.
Yeah.
So I went to the doctors, and I'm really sort of against doctors now. So I don't go there unless I'm really desperate.
Yeah.
And I expressed how desperate I was, and he just brushed me off as if I'd come in with a sniffle.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, was like, well, you know, you can... he was like, maybe you need to look at your life and your working less. And I'm like, well, that's not an option. Mm-hmm. And I don't work that much to make that a big issue. Or, you know, he didn't even particularly say, oh, I don't even feel like there's a drug that can help you. He just literally was like, maybe you can go on this website and it's about mental health. It was just so half-assed.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, this is really, like, keeping me up at night. This is stressing me out. I'm crying over this because it's bothering me and so much. And
then you realise you're the one who's going to have to think of the solution.
There's no answer for it in the medical institute anyway. So where to go but to yourself, but to spirituality, but to holistic methods, you know? And, you know, I'm only in early stages of that, but certain things that I feel like help. And I do want to throw in that being an empath is very likely you're going to experience high anxiety, especially if you don't customize your life in a way where you can cope with these symptoms, because you are going to be extra sensitive as an empath. So a lot of my coping mechanisms are more empath based. So things like, I make sure every day I have at least an hour of, like, alone time with myself, and I don't have to meditate. Like, obviously, it's ideally I'd love to meditate and do things like that in this time, but the point is that I'm not around any other energy, and that I'm just focused on myself, you know. Where, and I try not to watch or listen to music in this time. I try and do something like writing or meditating. But if I can sort of have that time every day, I find it, it really does reduce my anxiety.
I'm trying to do that as well, and it is helping.
Meditation is the best. Like, that really helps reduce anxiety. But I really battle with that, because my mind's just so, like, I get so anxious weirdly about the thought of meditating. So I'm really working on that. But if you feel too active, mentally active to meditate, still just take in an hour with no one else around, because you're sensitive to their energies. And if you're a people pleaser as well, you won't be able to be authentic unless you're, like, on your own, you know. So it's about having that time to really just relax.
Come back to yourself.
Because another reason that I realize I feel anxiety a lot is because I'm such a people pleaser. So I'm so tense, like always trying to make sure everyone else is okay all the time. And that's something that causes me anxiety because I'm so sensitive to all the energies around me. So that's another tip that I found really helped with my anxiety. So meditation, time going into yourself and being with yourself. And like we mentioned before, going out into nature.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that. If you find meditation daunting, like sometimes I do, other times, you know, I'm up for it. But I find going for a walk out in nature, no music, no podcast, nothing.
It's like the same thing.
Yeah, I get so, like, such good creative ideas. My, like, creative genius flows so much more when I take a stroll out in nature, just not around anyone, not hearing any other voices, anything, just in my own head. And I don't even realise it's happening until about halfway through the walk, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm like, always on a walk, I wish I had like a pen and paper with me or something. Should take one with me.
Well, you should to, like, do write notes and stuff. Voice records. Or voice memos. Yeah. That's a really good one for that. So that's what I like to do as well when I'm out and I'm not able to sit and write. But Steph's totally right. It's just being out, because when you are, that again is like a meditation in itself.
It is,
because you're just walking and you're in that monotonous motion that is turning on that meditation.
But it's also, you are, when you're in nature, nature is putting out that vibration that's very coherent with your true self, you know. So it's literally helping your body get into a more harmonized state within its own energy. That's like,
I think
that's why it's so good with sort of changing how you feel, you know, making you feel, bringing you up, because it brings your vibration up.
I'm pretty sure that's the vibration. It's 432 hertz. So you could also, if you're, say you live in a city and it's like loud and destructive and you can't get to a nice place, like the park's too loud with screaming kids, then what you can do, get loads of plants. But you could also just put some headphones on and listen to music with 432 hertz, because that's the same vibration as nature, and that's gonna just relax you. And it comes in so many forms, like even some pop songs are of that vibration. So just have a look. You can just search out on Spotify, YouTube, Google. That's another way to like get to that vibration. Another one is, it kind of goes in with walks, is animals. But literally, when I'll have a moment where I'm just focused on my cat, and I'm just looking at my cat, I'm focused on my cat, I'm stroking my cat, and I'm not anywhere else, you know. I'm not thinking, oh, I've got to do that tomorrow, and I've got to go do the horses later, and what am I going to have for tea? This is not, that's not
overthinking.
What you need to be thinking in your head. And you can often find that you are, like, it's literally pointless, like the way we're set up to think in this society, to be worried, constantly worried, thinking, I've got to do this and I've got to do that, and I wonder if that was okay that I did before. And like, the society sets you up that way. It doesn't set you up to be the creative being you were actually born to be, you know, thinking freely, being in the moment,
unique individual that you came here to be. And you can authentically be that once you realize that you don't have to play roles with people anymore. You can just be yourself, and people who are meant to be around will stay, and everything else will just fall away.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, like being in that present moment. If you can hold that space, that, like with the horses you find as well, and with the dog, like if you can really be in that moment with them, because they're in the moment, you know, you can feel they're focused on the moment, they're so in the moment, and it pulls you into it, you know. When have you seen that classic picture of the man and the dog on the walk, and then there's a thought bubble above person, and it's all like worries and
bills
and what he needs to do later, and like what he couldn't be and what he wants to be. And then there's the dog's thought bubble, and
it's like, oh wow, I'm having such a great time.
Can't wait. Like, it was just like he's living in the moment. And that's like a real eye-opener, you know, when you see stuff like that, because it reminds you, like, that's the way to live. Live, think more like a dog, be more like Be more dog.
Yes.
Be more dog. Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to beat anxiety and depression, be more dog. That's our advice.
I think another way that is helpful is going towards what makes you feel good. And I think this especially includes food, because once you start getting in touch with how you really feel, you can start to recognize how you really feel after you're eating the things that you're eating. And the better you start to feel in yourself, the more you naturally go towards food that will make you feel good.
Yeah, you'll go towards high vibrational food, because all food holds a vibration. And when you consume it, believe it or not, that affects your overall vibration.
Yeah, I've really got to work on that, you know. Because when sometimes I get good at it and I feel the difference. I really do.
Yeah,
I feel
but a lot better. Overall,
and then I get shitty at it again.
But overall, I felt a massive difference since I've been vegan. Like, I've never been so open spiritually than I've ever been since I've been vegan. Like, it's almost like I'm a whole different person.
Yeah, like the meat and the dairy and animal products, they are heavy. They're going to bring your vibration down.
Because
they are low frequency foods.
I feel like after a few years of being vegan, it was like my sight opened up. Almost like before, I was one of those horses, in London with the blinkers on.
It pulls the blinkers off for the rest of your life.
It's like suddenly you can see everything. You know, whereas before it was like my crappy life in London. Yeah. Focus, focus, focus. All these people. Meh, meh, meh. You know,
McDonald's is delicious.
Yeah.
Literally.
But also, it's not just the food that you're consuming. You're consuming everything. So when you're watching films, you're reading books, you're hanging around people, you are consuming their vibration. You are consuming those ideas and you're taking on that vibration. And does it resonate with you in a way that makes you feel good, or does it fucking just increase your anxiety further?
Yeah.
Because I used to think, oh yeah, I'm so cool, like I love horror movies.
Same.
Like I'm, you know, goth as fuck. But I don't want to watch horror films anymore. Like, that brings my vibration down.
You can't deny the low vibration of a horror film.
Like, guns and stuff. Like, people, like, I've had enough. I've seen it all. Like, I don't want anymore. It doesn't make me feel good. And when I stop consuming stuff that I'm not interested in, I don't want to see it, you know, I feel a lot better.
Yeah, because it also, like, it does perpetuate the depression and
the anxiety,
the crazy thoughts. So say you're, like, watching a film that has really fucked up stuff that's completely against everything in your moral compass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you've just, like, downloaded all of that into your brain, into your being.
Yeah.
And that is going to affect you. So then that becomes a part of your reality, whether you like it or not. When you consume, whatever you consume becomes a part of you.
Yeah.
So when
you take on that vibration, you attract more of that.
You invite that vibration in, and then you invite the thoughts of that. So it's like, for example, when I went through a phase where I got really into watching the crime documentary videos on YouTube, where people would talk about like serial killers and crime. I just found it so interesting, because I'm just naturally so interested in about people and finding out about all types of people. But what I realized is it was affecting my overall vibration. It was bringing thoughts into my mind, you know, like when you're walking somewhere in the dark, maybe it's normally you'd be fine,
right?
Yeah, you'd be fine normally, because
but then
you know
about that film and happened there, and that person got brutally murdered.
Yeah, and they was just outside their house. Like, and they lived in a quiet village where nothing ever happened like that, you know, and then all these thoughts, like it literally does affect you. Whether you think it doesn't or not, and whether you're like, I want to be a badass or not, it affects you, you know. However, you know, even men are like, nothing affects me. Like,
nothing,
it affects
you're
them.
Human beings.
What about, like, this is a different example. I'm just trying to think of a different example of a man. So say a man's like, oh, you know, I'm not scared of gore and I'm not scared of stuff like that. But then maybe they watch a film where there's betrayal, and then that starts to plant seeds in their head. Is my partner betraying me? You know, is there cheating going on?
What I was going to say about films, because I love films.
Yes,
I love
Steph
watching
loves
films.
A good film.
I'm a film addict. But I with like horror or like the far-fetched kind, I find it doesn't affect me so much. It's something that's really emotional or traumatic, then it's believable. For me, something like that, something
like real life stuff,
real suffering,
like rapey, like
I can barely stand to watch.
Like I can't, like it's too real.
Yeah,
I don't want to be thinking
a family member dies of cancer.
Yeah, it's the real life suffering that I cannot.
And there's a reason they put so much of this kind of media out there, you know.
I hate like betrayal in any way, like, you know, that's in a lot of movies, whether it's like partners or friendships or alliances,
like,
or
as if
business partners.
Yeah, human nature. It's always make like it this relatable, like, oh, everyone's experienced this, but then that's because
it perpetuates
then, it's, yeah, exactly.
But it's because we're thinking it, because they're putting it out there. Yeah.
Why don't why do we think that people are going to betray us?
Yeah.
You know?
Because like, it's constantly...
Really, do you want to betray everyone?
It's
like,
constantly...
It's not really in our nature.
Hello.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Had to get in the middle of you guys.
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry, guys. If I knew you could see...
Yeah, he's had enough of our 40 minutes chatting.
Yeah.
Oh no, 50.
Well,
so far.
We will wrap it up.
We are going to wrap it up
in a minute because it is coming to time.
Yeah, we've pretty much said all that we wanted to say.
You have such lovely eyes. You
taking pictures
do.
Of the dog. So.
See, dogs make everything better.
Yeah, look at him.
Yeah.
You're so cute.
And distracting.
Oh my god, Eric is putting his head under the table.
Kelly, talk.
Sorry, okay, we're going to wrap it up now. So, yeah, we spoke about a few things that have helped us out. And this was our first episode on depression and anxiety. So we'll probably touch on this again at some point. Just wanted to sort of get about our perspective.
Sorry, the dog is being too cute.
The dog's being really cute. So we are going to wrap it up here. And... yes, we will see you next week. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, we really enjoyed this one, actually, because it's speaking more from personal experience. So thanks for listening.
Hopefully
and
helpful. And
yeah,
we like touching on these real subjects. So,
yeah, acknowledge your pain.
Thank you, Steph. Yes.
Yeah.
Good point to end
and
on.
We will see you guys next week. Thanks again for tuning into the Lioness Podcast, and do subscribe.
Bye.
Bye-bye.